Hi, this is Don McLean.
I'm Zach Galifianakis. Happy holidays, everyone.
I'm Carol Burnett.
Hey, it's David Archuleta here.
This is Skeeter Davis.
You're listening to the Sounds of Christmas
podcast. Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the player or the tree on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very excited to have indie artist Quinn Hedges with us on this episode of the Sounds of Christmas podcast. Quinn is a singer, a songwriter, a guitarist, and a two-time semifinalist in the International Songwriting Competition. Quinn, what am I leaving out?
Voting member for the Grammy Awards.
Okay.
And father, husband.
That's probably more important than the other stuff that I mentioned.
No, yeah, it's all a big melting pot.
Right. One of the things I was going to wait and get to this to when we were talking about the Christmas album, but I just can't. You have performed the national anthem for the Sacramento Kings, Los Angeles Lakers game, and that's a big deal because it's an important song that you have to get right. What was that like?
It was very nerve-wracking, to be honest. And this was back when the Sacramento Kings played at Arco Arena. So I think there was about 18,000 people in the arena. It was back when Kobe Bryant was on the Lakers. So it was kind of cool to see, you know, the legends right there. But yes, very nerve-wracking. You know, going into it when you sing that song, when you perform that song, that there's no room for error. And luckily, you know, right before you do a performance like that, like, it seems like there's like, I don't know if it's like this for everyone, but I've noticed it a few times where there's a brain fart right before you start, and then the words just happen to come. So at that moment, there was a slight brain fart. You second guess everything that you've done, but it did. Everything came out, and it turned out really nice. I don't know if I would do it again. I have to really think about it because of the stress level. I will tell you a funny story about that, though. Is a perk you get when you sing the national anthem is you get courtside seats to to the game. However, I was not able to take advantage of that because I had another gig in Sacramento that I kind of hustled out to. But the thing is that that night I performed the national anthem in front of, you know, 18,000, a sold out arena. And then I shuttled away to this small little coffee shop to perform in front of like six people. So that was like a vast difference.
Wow.
In the evening. And part of me was like, why didn't you just, you know, take advantage? But I just have the hustle mentality. I wanted to, you know, say yes to everything.
Especially as an indie artist, you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes for a good story now, right?
Yeah. I want to get to the new album in a minute, but I often link the national anthem to a song that is on your new album, Night Divine, O Holy Night, because that's another one that so many have done and people are so judgmental about it that it's a song you have to get right. Did you feel that when you were recording it?
Yeah, that's a big song, and it's such a beautiful composition. There was a performance. This song's special to me because I did a performance when I was, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12, around that age, at like a midnight Christmas service. And you know that note, the note that you hit, the high note in O Holy Night? My voice hadn't changed at that point, and I remember just like really nailing that note. And it was just like, my parents talk about like everyone getting chills and everything. So it was a special song. And when this project came up, I was like, you know, yes, my voice has changed. I'm not going to hit that same note, but I'm able to do it. I'm able to do it my own way, you know? So it's one of the heavy hitters of Christmas music.
I want to talk about your other music a little bit before we get back to the new album. Your first album, just called Quinn Hedges. Then from there to an album with your cousin, and I understand you and your cousin have something new in the works for next year. What is there something that is very similar about all this stuff, or is it all different?
It's all different. The Quinn Hedges album, that was my first one. That was, I believe, released around 2005. And that was kind of a collection of young Quinn, you know, beginning songwriter. And I go back and I listen to it and I can tell how much I've grown as a writer and performer. Then I had an acoustic album called Without You in 2010. The Quinn Hedges Band, which I led in Sacramento for quite a while, released an album called Step Outside. And then Slightly South of Stormy Clouds with my cousin. That was the first one, the Slightly South with my cousin. That was the first one where it was more of a collaboration than like a group of my songs. So he's an extremely talented composer and arranger. He went to the Curtis Institute of Music and was the president of the school. So he's got all that dialed in, and it's kind of cool to bring songs to him and have like a world-class talent put stuff behind it, if that makes sense.
You had said you had referred to one of your albums as more acoustic. Isn't a lot, if not most of your stuff, wouldn't you consider it acoustic?
Well, the reason I say that is because there wasn't one electric guitar on that album, on the Without You album. There's no drums. So I kind of consider it like coffee drinking music, you know. I used that album to put my sons to sleep for a while. Every other album that I've had, you know, is a full orchestration. You know, there's electric guitars, there's drums, there's horns and strings. So I think The Night Divine that's coming out now is the closest to that Without You album.
To get a even better idea of Quinn and his music, you've got to check out his YouTube channel. There's a ton of live performances, and there's covers. And just from what we've been talking about, you might have an idea of who Quinn might have covered, but you're wrong. I just look at this list, and this is amazing. Peter Gabriel, Pearl Jam, Chris Isaak, Eric Clapton, Bob Dylan, James Taylor, Jeff Healey, Guns N' Roses. It's like if you're listening to this and you're thinking, okay, Peter Gabriel had some stuff, Pearl Jam, wait, what? And then, okay, Eric Clapton had some acoustic kind of stuff, and Bob Dylan and James Taylor, okay, wait, Guns N' Roses? And it's like every third or fourth one is a surprise, like Alice in Chains, The Tragically Hip, Stone Temple Pilots, The Cars, Led Zeppelin, The Foo Fighters. It's really an amazing mix, and it just really goes to really underscore a point I like to make, is that none of us like one particular small box of music. Most of us like it all, and most artists are inspired by it all. And I think this is an amazing and it's just a terrific list of performances. Is there something that you have been wanting to cover that you just haven't gotten around to?
Ooh, that is a good question. Yeah, I think, you know, Black Hole Sun has been on my list for a long time that I never really have taken the time. You know, a lot of the performances that I do around the region are kind of, you know, winery gigs, restaurant gigs, where you're kind of, you know, background music. So what they want are, you know, covers. So
right,
my whole thing is I don't really like to play things note for note. I like to kind of put my own twist on these covers, but I'm looking for tunes that like that bring you back to a certain point in time, that that spark that nostalgia. And and that's why you see just kind of like a hodgepodge of songs, because they did that to me, you know. When I think some of these songs that I've covered, you know, it puts, you know, they were songs that made me feel something before I decided to put them into my repertoire.
I just love this. As I'm going through all of these different performances and all these covers, and I go through Michael Jackson and Ben Folds 5 and REM, and then there's your niece covering Kesha.
Yeah. My niece, she's 17 years old now, and so talented. And it showed at an early age. I think she was, I don't know, maybe 5 during that video, and just knew all the songs and kind of held the mic and went for it.
Has there ever been a point where she said, "Uncle Quinn, please take that down"?
No, she's a performer. She's in a few bands. She plays bass. Her mother, my sister, is also a singer in a very popular wedding band in the region too. So they're called Cover Me Bad, and it's a dance fun band. And so she grew up with that. And she's off to a great start to her music career.
When I started this episode, I said that I was excited to have you on. And I know I say that a lot when I'm talking to people. And the truth is, I am, because I'm excited about the music. I don't have just everybody on this podcast. I couldn't, because there's so much Christmas music that comes out every year. But I remember hearing Blue Christmas, your performance of Blue Christmas before, and I don't know how many people have done Blue Christmas, but you bring something different to this, because when I listen to your version of Blue Christmas, and I could close my eyes, and it's like you're here. It's you and a guitar, and you're in my living room, and you're playing. It has that very intimate presence to it. That's kind of hard to describe, but when you hear it, you just feel it. And I don't know if that's what you were going for, or if that just happened.
I don't know. I'm not sure either. This was the first album that I kind of engineered myself, and maybe because it's so stripped down, it's just acoustic guitar. It is probably the least arranged out of all of them. I mean, there's some background vocals, and there's a 12 string that comes in about halfway through the song, but it is simple. And and thank you for the kind words. I appreciate
certainly
that. Yeah.
The most of this album is it does feel like that. It feels, you know, you were talking about going from the sold out arena of 18,000 to playing for 6 people, and this has that feeling of being lucky enough to be at a small intimate performance at Christmas time, and here's this indie artist who comes out with his guitar, and it just has that feel to it. And it, you know, there are, I was telling somebody else this the other day, there are so many versions of Blue Christmas that are out there. It's tough to do one now and have it stand out, but there are so many that you hear and you can almost feel like the guy who's singing it and sort of has a smirk on his face and is giving you a wink. And it's not, you know, he's just doing a thing. He's just playing a song. It doesn't mean anything. But when I hear your version of Blue Christmas, I feel like you mean it.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think the general listener and you're definitely in tune to all the Christmas catalog, but the general listener, they can tell, I feel, if there's a connection from the artist and the song. You know, there were a bunch of songs that didn't make the cut on this album that I just didn't end up getting that connection with. But Blue Christmas was one of those that wasn't one of my first choices when I first started making my list. And then it just came up and I started playing. I was like, okay, well, this is kind of like a no-brainer. Everything went smoothly with that song.
Was there's seven songs on this. Was there more that you hoped to do and just ran out of time? The reason I'm asking is, like, is there going to be a Night Divine 2?
You know, I don't know. I knew I wanted to keep it at like an EP level. Mm-hmm. And I wanted the songs to be about between 2 to 3 minutes long, just to keep up with the formula of you know, streaming, you know, and people's, you know, attention span. So there could be, it depends, you know, if this album really, if people take a liking to it, you know, quite possibly there could be a part two.
Now, we talked about O Holy Night and Blue Christmas. I'm just kind of curious, was there any particular inspiration that led you to pick the some of these other tracks on here, whether it's a song that you always loved or an artist who did it that you really liked?
Yeah, let's see. So, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel is one that, you know, and I, you know, there's only two secular songs out of the seven. And I grew up going to like a Presbyterian church on the East Coast and then going to Catholic high school. So, in Catholic grade school. So there, you know, I've been in music my whole life. So there were songs that, you know, every Christmas when it came around, just like kind of like, oh, you know, that melody that O Come, O Come, Emmanuel was one that like has like almost like an eerie vibe to it. And I kind of like, if you're a Led Zeppelin fan, I got that like Battle of Evermore vibe from it, from Led Zeppelin 4. And I was like, okay, I can kind of do something with this and make it my own and put in the mandolin and have just kind of like just a different feel than like, you know, grinning ear to ear with all the Christmas, you know, that the vibe. It's I just wanted to kind of twist it a little bit.
I get what you're saying, and at the same time, I have to tell you, I'm pretty sure that's the first time I've ever heard anybody link "O Come, O Come, Emmanuel" with Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I've got some screws loose in my head.
No. That's you know, Christmas music is one of the few, if not only, genre where pretty much anything goes, that you can have something that is gospel and R&B, and you can have hip hop, and you can have something that sounds like a crooner, and you can have something that sounds like Led Zeppelin, and all of it is okay. You can't really do that in jazz or pop or any other genre and have it, you know, radio certainly wouldn't touch it, wouldn't know what to do with it. And a lot of people have been trained by traditional radio, so they wouldn't know either. I mean, so much of music now is available online as opposed to trying to find it in your local whatever store that used to sell music that is now
business, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have to try and go and find, well, where is the section that has music that sounds like Led Zeppelin and O Come, O Come, Emmanuel? Because that wouldn't exist. But so many of us like both of those things and can make that kind of connection. And I think when you're putting together Christmas music, that you don't have to, one of the things you don't have to think about are those sort of barriers, genre barriers.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense or if that's just my little personal.
No, it does. And honestly, I hadn't thought about performing much Christmas music until about a year ago when I kind of decided to do this album. So it was all new to me. And I think I've had, you know, 20 years of experience playing cover tunes my own way, my own version. So it was just kind of like a cool opportunity to do that.
Well, that's the other thing I really like about this album is that it's cover songs, it's songs that most people know, but it is done in your style. It is done your way. It's not the same thing that you heard from everybody else. I get hundreds of Christmas songs sent to me every year. And I had one a couple years ago sent to me by an artist who had been famous 20, 30 years ago. And it was a version of, I think it was Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. And it was exactly like Brenda Lee's version, almost note for note. And you couldn't, if you didn't know who was singing it, you wouldn't know who was singing it. There was nothing of the actual artist in it. And it just didn't work. It just was like nothing special. It was like the impression that you get is that they have 10 minutes of studio time left and let's knock out a Christmas record. And that's it. And you don't feel like that at all with Night Divine. All of these tracks are very rich and they're very big, but very simple, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Ken. That's very, you know, this is, I haven't gotten much feedback yet but those are very kind words and well, I did spend some time, you know, I think an artist has to care about what they're putting out there. So yeah, I did put some care into this.
Now, I know it doesn't matter as much now as it used to about what the first song on the album is. That used to be a big thing that you had to really think about, because this is the first song everybody's going to hear and it's got to be something big and powerful and it's got to be the right thing and all. But it's not like that now. And you released Blue Christmas as the first single, which is actually the second track. First song is Joy to the World. Was there any sort of thought process into the order of the songs, putting Joy to the World first?
Yeah, I put Joy to the World first because I did want people to get like a very happy vibe from this album. And I felt like when I listened back to the performance of Joy to the World, there are some curveballs in the song with some backing vocals and everything, but you get the general sense that like I'm like smiling throughout, like, and you want the kind of, you want that vibe, that warmth to kind of come through. And I felt like that was a good kind of icebreaker to the album.
I completely agree. And I think having that and then Blue Christmas following it really shows how big this is, the depth from going from one to the other. Blue Christmas comes across as, well, it is a kind of a sad song, but it comes across as like that you get it. You know that sometimes Christmas is tough for everybody and you get it and you understand how somebody else feels and it's okay. And that's the feeling I get. So Blue Christmas is not necessarily, it's not a dirge and it's not about being sad and sorry for yourself. It's more about understanding that this is how it is sometimes, and it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah.
And that coupled with Joy to the World, which is joyful, it shows a real, the word I'm looking for keeps going away, but just a huge gamut of emotions from going from one to the other.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another song that I cover like in my regular gigs, and it's Everybody Hurts by REM. And, you know, if you could ask people like that, you know, like you could say like, hey, what's one of the saddest songs that you know about, you know, and that Everybody Hurts, you know, that comes up, you know, it's a ballad and it's, you know, it's dealing with really sad things. But the way that I twist that one in my performances is in a happy way. I remember I got a compliment from that song once that was like, you know, you just made the saddest song in the world sound like the happiest song in the world. And it's all in perception. And I, while the words of Blue Christmas are, you know, sad that you're not with your loved one, the melody to me, like, lended to a just like you pointed out, like an it's okay kind of like vibe. So yeah, it's perspective, right?
Right. I mean, there are, you know, I had mentioned before, and I don't mean to make this all about Blue Christmas, but there are so many versions out there, and there are some that are funereal, so sad, pulling at the heartstrings and hopeless. And there are some that are like done for a lark and it's a joke. And this isn't either of those, but there is that feeling also of hope that, you know, and that you're not alone.
Yeah.
And I think that's terrific because, you know, there are a lot of people who are alone at Christmas. And I think hearing that, I get it. Sometimes it's hard. I get it. Just getting that feeling helps.
Sure. Sure.
Little Drummer Boy. Any particular thing that drove you to pick that one?
I will say I chose Little Drummer Boy mainly because it's my wife's favorite Christmas song.
Good, important reason.
Yep. At first I was thinking of doing it. It was the first song that I started recording out of all of these, just to see, like, is this, you know, an album that I want to pursue? And it also gave me an opportunity to work with a phenomenal drummer named Brandon Harris down in Los Angeles. And so he's the drummer that comes in on Little Drummer Boy and What Child Is This at the end. And it had a vibe to it when I started recording it, and you know, it makes sense. Little Drummer Boy, let's hear a regular drummer, not just like a snare drum, you know what I mean? Let's hear something different.
You know, it's funny, I played the drums in high school and college and a little before and a little after that. And Little Drummer Boy is one of those songs that I am very judgmental about.
Sure.
Because there are, I know that the first version of it was the Harry Simone Chorale, and there were in fact no drums in it. It was, you know, there was, I think it was the basses in the chorale that were doing the pa-rum-pa-pum-pums and all. But aside from that, when I hear acoustic groups, a cappella groups who choose to do Little Drummer Boy and there's no drums in it, that's just one of those things that bugs me. And I saw that on your album, and so much of your stuff is acoustic. And as I'm listening to it, it, you know, it has that feel to it. And we get to Little Drummer Boy, and I'm ready to be annoyed that, oh, here it is, an acoustic version of Little Drummer Boy. And then the drums are there. And I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you for putting drums in Little Drummer Boy, because drum is right there in the name of the song.
And it didn't start. Yeah, you're right. And it doesn't start out that way either. The drums come in, I think, in the second verse. So, yeah.
But, you know, it's just a silly little thing that has always... I get, you know, I said I get a lot of songs sent to me, and I don't mean to sound, you know, egotistical, like I get a lot of songs, but many of them are not ready for prime time. It's so much easier now to be able to record something and put it up on Spotify than in the old days, where you had to, you pretty much had to have a record label if you wanted it to be in Tower Records or wherever. So I get plenty of people who are trying to be the next Pentatonix, and they're sending me their version of Little Drummer Boy, and there are, in fact, no drums in it. And I'm like, okay, come on. Come on. And I know that's just my thing, but I was very happy to hear that in your version. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything that I have missed about Night Divine that you think people ought to know about or would like them to know?
I don't know. I'm kind of curious how the regular Christmas music listener is going to perceive this, because it I just kind of went with my instincts, you know. Aside from wanting the songs to be a certain length and wanting the album to not be overplayed or, you know, too long, I kind of went with my gut and rolled with it. So we shall see. I think Ken, I appreciate. I can tell that you put some time into listening and just kind of into some research from me before doing this interview. And I just want to say thank you. You know, there's a lot of interviews that I've had that you know, it's just surface. So I appreciate that.
Well, I like to have people on this podcast whose music I do really like, and I love Christmas music, and I built the Sounds of Christmas to be something that plays Christmas music that I think people will like. I try not to put anything in there that I don't play stuff that, you know, that somebody just paid me to play it and here it is. And you know, and I get that every song may not be everybody's taste. I play thousands of songs. Sure, you're not going to love everything, but I do try. But the stuff that I do like, I try to let people know about when there's new stuff coming out. I mean, I don't need to have Cher on this podcast. She's got a new Christmas album out this year. It's huge. She's in People magazine and USA Today and everywhere. And it would be hard not to know that she's got a Christmas album out. Most people know. Most people are going to hear it. I don't need to let anybody know about that. That said, Cher, if you're listening, I'd be happy to have you on and talk about it.
Of course.
But when I came across yours, and I just thought, you know, this is something different, and I think people will like this. And I wanted to be able to let people know and let people hear it. And you'll be able to hear it on the Sounds of Christmas if you haven't heard it already. And you'll be able to hear it again. And I like to be able to do that with the Christmas music that I like. And it is my station, so I make the picks. Nobody else gives me a chart or something and says you have to play this new Quinn Hedges record. Nobody has done that. You are advertising, but I reached out to you because I like what I heard. And I hope that listeners find it, and I hope that it brings more people to find you. That's why I've got you. That's why I invited you onto this podcast. That's why I'm playing your songs.
Thank you, Ken. Yeah,
you're very welcome.
Very kind of you.
What's the best way for people to keep up with you? Is it social media, your website?
Yeah, I've got a Facebook page, Quinn Hedges, Instagram. I also have a TikTok page. I'm still learning some of the social media stuff, but also have an email list newsletter that I'll send out, and I will also kind of let people know about the Sounds of Christmas in my monthly newsletter. But quinnhedges.com, and you can also just search Quinn Hedges in like Spotify or Apple Music, Pandora, and my other albums will populate.
Okay. I notice on your website, when you go to quinnhedges.com, at the bottom, there's all the little icons for all the other places. So I'm going to make sure to put a link to your website down in the show notes for this, and everybody can click over there, and then they can go to their favorite place to find out more about you. And perfect. I'm going to go ahead and put an extra link in there for the YouTube channel, because there's something for everybody there. And I think you'll like what you find, and you'll like the way he interprets some of these songs that you think you know. So I'll put that in there too. Thanks so much for spending some time with us and talking about all this stuff today, Quinn.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Ken. I appreciate it.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I told you how to listen to the station, and you're already listening to the podcast, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab, and we have a Linktree page so you can find us on your favorite streaming site, and then you can subscribe and you'll never miss another episode. And I'll put that link down in the show notes too. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.